Hi, everybody. This is Brett, and welcome to a supplemental installment of School Sucks Podcast for March 15th, 2011. What you are going to hear today is from last Sunday, the Sunday edition of Free Talk Live, which I had the pleasure of hosting with Stephanie Murphy. So first of all, thank you to Stephanie for inviting me to do this. And of course, Stephanie is the host of Pork Therapy Podcast. Excellent program. I highly recommend checking it out. And she has also been a somewhat frequent voice on this show in the past, as far as frequent voices on this show in the past go. And I'm sure you'll hear more from her on School Sucks in the future. So this is a segment of the show. It's actually about the first half. And here we devote most of our conversation to the Wisconsin situation, public versus private sector unions, and thoughts on and frustrations with some of these students out there in Madison who have joined their teachers in these protests. My frustrations, of course, with the fact that they're doing that, but also that I've tried to reach out to several of them to organize a roundtable so I can have them on School Sucks and politely ask what the F they think they're doing out there. Nothing really back yet, and that's too bad. But we'll talk about that. A few other education and non-education topics cover as well. We take a few phone calls. And since you're only going to hear the first half of the show, it's worth mentioning that the very talented Hannah Hoffman, the jazz musician, you might remember Hannah if you've been to Porkfest, and I've used her music on this show in the past as well. She joins us in the second half of the show, and the fun continues. So be sure to go to freetalklive.com to get the full archive. And also check out the rest of the excellent work that Mark and Ian do over the course of the week. They're co-hosts as well. They are on Monday through Saturday, 7 to 10 p.m. on 90-plus radio stations, which is a really amazing accomplishment as far as spreading this message goes. So thanks again to Stephanie. Thanks to Mark and Ian for Free Talk Live. And thanks to people like Jason Osborne, who make shows such as Free Talk Live and School Sucks possible. So that's it. I will start you out today with this.
More now on the budget showdown in Wisconsin. Protesters say the budget repair bill is an attack on unions and collective bargaining. It also requires teachers and other public workers to pay a bigger share of their pension and benefit costs. Well, Nancy Rice, she is a middle school band director. She's been on the front lines protesting this bill, and she joins us from Madison. I want to thank you for joining us. Obviously, your passion when we saw you yesterday really sparked our interest in talking to you again today. You've been out there for days now protesting this budget, and a lot of kids are out of school. We heard from some teachers who think you should be in the classroom. How long will you be out there? Tell us why.
I'm out here for my students. I would love to be teaching, but I'm out here for their rights. I'm out here for their voice. If I don't be out here for them, we're going to lose this. We have started collective bargaining in 1959. For 52 years, we've been out here. And now all of a sudden, Governor Scott Walker wants to say, forget it, no voice. We are not out here about the pay and the benefits. We are out here for our voice. He is trying to bust our unions. He is trying to not give us a voice. We need a voice for everyone. We're not just speaking about Wisconsin unions, Wisconsin schools. We're speaking about America. And if it starts here, it will be going to other states.
Ms. So Rice, let me ask you this. Ask you this. If the governor came back with a deal and he said, look, you're going to have to contribute more to your pensions, to your health care plan, because the state just can't afford it, but we will allow you to continue the bargaining rights, would that be acceptable?
That would be acceptable. We are willing to give up something. We want to have a partnership. He does not want to have a partnership. He will not come to the table. We will come to the table. We will talk about things. Yes, we are willing to bargain with him. If we have no rights for that, if we cannot do that, then we will not come to the table. We need to have the collective bargaining struck from this proposal.
I don't think he's right.
This is his own proposal. He thinks this is about health insurance, pensions. This is about a voice, collective bargaining. He needs to be man enough to come to the table. He needs to be a leader. He needs to show us that he is willing to form a partnership.
And right, I want to ask you really quickly, you talked about being man enough to come to the table. I want you to react to the Democratic state senators who have not been at the table. No shows in this voting for this budget. We understand the tactic that they're using, but do you think they should come to the table as well?
State and through every state. And we thank the people who've come here from other states today. And we want to be with them also.
Ms. Reich, can I ask you, you talk about coming to the table, the governor coming to the table. Do you think it was the right tactic for the Democratic senators?
United we stand.
Not
United
to come to the
we
table.
Stand. United we stand. United we stand. United we stand. United
we stand. Pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brondo stuff.
The Brondo's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
So wait a minute. What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops?
Yes.
Water. Like out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
But Brondo's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
Okay, look, the plants aren't growing, so I'm pretty sure that the Brondo's not working. Now, I'm no botanist, but I do know that if you put water on plants, they grow.
Well, I've never seen no plants grow out of no toilet.
Hey, that's good. You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
Yeah.
Okay, look, you want to solve this problem. I want to get my pardon, so why don't we just try it, okay? And not worry about what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know? It's what they use to make Brondo. Yeah, but why do they use them to make Brondo?
Because Brondo's got electrolytes.
This is Free Talk Live. Now, you're hearing my voice, but this is not She Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. Just want to get that clear. She Talk Live will be back next month. This month, we have a special guest who has come in graciously to fill in for the Queen Quill, who is away. So it's not going to be She Talk Live because this guest happens to be a man, but I'm still very glad to have him. And, of course, I'm Stephanie with you, and my guest is, would you like to say hello?
Sure. This is Brett. Good
Hi,
to
Brett.
Be here.
Yeah, great to have you. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Brett is, of course, the host of School Sucks podcast, and you should definitely check them out. He's got just the most profound content out there out of the podcast world, I have to say. I really always enjoy his show. And, you know, it's made me think a lot about the things that I experienced in government school growing up and the way that kids are treated in general. And I think those are really important topics to very relevant to liberty. So you should all check that out.
I also encourage you to do so. And thank you.
Yeah, of course. So we have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, Brett, right?
Absolutely.
And if you would like to call and weigh in with your thoughts, you can give us a call at 603-435-1105. One more time, that's 603-435-1105. And you can also check us out on the studio cam. Although, the lighting's not looking that great. I'll have to fix that during the next break. Studio's looking a little dim. But if you would like to hear this show basically simulcast as we're talking, you can hear the most up-to-date stream at cam.freetalklive.com. And I think also cam.lrn.fm works as well. So the first thing I wanted to talk about tonight, unless we get some calls, is...
One quick thing I should mention, first of all. Is that I just want to warn everybody that I put out some encouragement for some of the students in Wisconsin to phone in the show. I've been tracking some of them down on YouTube, some of these Wisconsin students who are standing in solidarity with their public sector.
They don't know what they're doing.
they have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they're standing hand in hand with their public sector employee teachers. And I've been reaching out to them and, you know, offering them a forum, not with any intention of ambushing them, saying, you know, there will be some challenging questions and giving them a link to the website. Well, I haven't gotten much of a response yet. So the names I had compiled, which included about 15 students who were all active in these Wisconsin protests, I sent out an email just saying, we're on the radio tonight and here's the number. If you want to have a forum, I'd be happy to discuss that situation with you.
Awesome.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, please call in. I mean, I hope that they tune into Free Talk Live. Maybe if they don't catch the show live, they'll check out the podcast and they'll want to call into Free Talk Live during the week because they do this 7 nights a week. It's Ian and Mark during the rest of the week and they're on 7 to 10 every night. But yeah, maybe they'll get exposed to some new ideas and have some conversation. I hope they call us, though, because I would like to talk to them.
I would really enjoy that. I had been trying to put together a roundtable, and they all seem so vocal, you know, when they're being interviewed on television. I was hoping I could get three or four of them to come on my show and you know, talk about why they're supporting these public worker union protests.
Yeah, I haven't really seen much I basically stopped paying attention to like mainstream news.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
It's a good idea.
I don't know. I go back. I'm torn on that because on one hand, it can be a good outreach tool to people to say, hey, look what's going on in current events right now. This is what the government is doing. You know, these are some big abuses here. But on the other hand, reading that stuff just makes me sad. You know, it's not going to really persuade me of much. I already have my views. And so I don't know. Sometimes I feel like, what is it going to do to read that?
And I think, too, that the media has devolved into basically, you know, you look at Fox News, you look at MSNBC, and, you know, even these publications that are considered to be more highbrow, like the New York Times, it's basically just people, you know, seeking out reinforcements for their opinions.
Right.
They kind of swat away any opinions or fight against any opinions that contradict the belief system that they're comfortable with.
Yep.
And they retreat to Fox News or they retreat to the New York Times and they say, oh, I am right.
Yeah.
People agree with me. People are saying the same things as me. So
now I'm guilty of that, too. I have to be the first one to admit that I live in a libertarian bubble somewhat.
Yeah.
Because I get most of my news from pro-freedom sources.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think everyone has the tendency to do that. Although if you look at the mainstream news, it's basically just different flavors of statism. It's not really fundamentally that much different from each other. You know, there maybe the red team and the blue team each have their publications that express certain opinions, but they don't really diverge too widely.
I think in any way that really matters, there's really no difference between, you know, Fox and MSNBC or the right and the left. They're all pretty much, you know, espousing the same ideas. And unfortunately, what most people think is news, I mean, these things like CNN, maybe not so much CNN, but definitely MSNBC and Fox, they are to news what, like, wrestling is to sports. You know what I mean? It's not... So,
like, you mean fabricated, staged kind of very?
I don't think that they're complicit in any kind of conspiracy to dumb people down. It's just that, you know, they have 24 hours a day of content to fill. Well, I mean, 16 hours a day once you take out all of the, blood pressure and erectile dysfunction medication ads. They have 16 hours a day of news to fill. So they need to be in constant contact with the government and they need to be. I mean, it's basically like Access Hollywood or Entertainment Tonight for Washington, D.C. So they need to have contact with politicians. They need to have access to these people. So if they upset them, they're going to lose their access and their competitors are going to get that edge.
Mm-hmm.
So what we see is people just lobbing softball questions at, the left or the right, and they just become basically like a propaganda or public relations arm of the government.
Yeah. And in some cases, they actually recycle the government's own press releases and just pass it off as news.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Although, do you think to a certain extent they're kind of responding to what people demand? I mean, I think people are a lot of times very interested in like celebrity gossip and that kind of quote unquote news. And so I don't know. I mean, people do watch it. I don't know if it's because they have sort of a oligopoly on news, you know?
Well, yeah, and that's why I would say that I don't think that the cable media or even the media in general is complicit in some kind of conspiracy to dumb down the public, because if you look at what is on the rest of the cable stations, we've got, you know, the Kardashians, we have just a myriad of absolutely ridiculous reality TV shows.
I thought I only heard about them on Star Trek.
They're real.
Yeah, that's
they
what
are
I think
real.
Of.
They come in threes. And the Jersey Shore,
yeah,
one of the most popular. So, I mean, people are sending these signals to the media market that, hey, we're really dumb. So, you know, if you could incorporate some of that stupidity into the news, we might enjoy that. Yeah, so I take your point.
That's been years in the making, though. I mean, it's not just that people suddenly or always were dumb. It's like they've been conditioned in government schools, as I'm sure you well know, to just go along to get along and to not really think critically or ask questions. I mean, I was just thinking about this the other day, thinking about science and how scientific data is interpreted kind of by the public at large and how scientific misconceptions exist in like mainstream culture. And really the root of it is just that people are not taught critical thinking and how to determine whether something is credible evidence mm-hmm. or even how to use evidence to form opinions. You know,
I think people also become intellectually lazy because mm-hmm. they start to associate education and enlightenment with things that they've always found to be excruciatingly boring because right. they were always told to equate education, learning, enlightenment with what was going on inside those concrete buildings that mm-hmm. they were shoved into for 12 years. So I think most people are resistant to that. And instead, what they want is like easy answers, yep. easy entertainment, mm-hmm. so and you know, easy reinforcement of their own belief systems, which is why they're attracted to this mind-numbing reality television and why they're attracted to Fox News, because they like that simplicity, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, I mean, do you think religion plays a part in that, too? Because taking things on faith is, you know, if you learn to not question and you learn to say, to not say like, hey, this doesn't really add up, maybe I should explore this further. I think that kind of generalizes to other areas of knowledge. Would you agree?
I would agree. Maybe we can get into that when we get back.
Absolutely. And the number is 603-435-1105 if you would like to call us. This is Free Talk Live. And we'll be back shortly. Give us a call. This is Free Talk Live. Welcome back to our show. We're so glad to have you in the audience tonight. Stephanie here with you.
And Brett.
And, we would like you to give us a call and let us know what's on your mind. Our number is 603-435-1105. Please do call in and let us know your thoughts. But before the break last segment, we were discussing these Wisconsin protests, I guess. There's these public sector is too nice of a word. These government employees, right?
Yes, there's lots of not nice but very accurate ways we could describe it. But yeah. I think most people go with public sector, which right. Public is a euphemism for something that's controlled by the government, mm-hmm. essentially. Or something that swings from the umbilical cord, basically, of the taxpayers.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, I don't want my wallet to be public.
Right, right.
Exactly. I don't want any part of my body to be public, you know,
yes.
like things that I own, things that I have control over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But anyway.
Not even just a third?
No.
No. For the children?
No way.
No, not for the children, Stephanie?
Sorry, can't do it.
Oh.
No. So we were discussing these protests that have been happening in Wisconsin, and we do have a call on the line, but maybe we should... The call dropped off, so
okay.
All right, maybe caller, you can call back, but we'll just talk about this in the meantime. These protests have been happening in Wisconsin, and basically, these teachers are bargaining what they want to be able to bargain as part of unions for more benefits and perks.
They will swear up and down that it's not about the money.
Yep.
That it's about having collective bargaining rights, but when you listen to these people talk, I've really seen two things. I've seen them basically recycle the same sort of prepackaged talking points. No matter what they're asked, it's like sometimes it almost sounds like they're not talking to the person who's interviewing them because
wow.
they'll just start. They sound like wind up toys.
Wow.
They'll just start reading off a script. I actually saw this interview where I think it was even on MSNBC, which you think would be relatively friendly to their cause.
Right.
But they have a conversation for about 3 minutes. And then the anchor asks one of the teachers that they're interviewing, well, you say that the governor in the state won't come to the table to negotiate. How do you feel about your own Democratic senators basically skipping town?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she, instead of answering the question, she just starts encouraging the crowd to start chanting to drown out the anchor's.
Wow.
Quiet. It was astonishing. I couldn't believe it.
I wonder how many other people noticed that and thought about why that was a little off.
Right.
Very off.
So they will, no matter what they're asked, they'll just say, you know, if you're happy that you have a weekend, if you're happy that you have a safe work environment,
yep.
if you're happy about the 40-hour work week, you can thank us.
Yeah.
Well, no, and you see how collectivistic their thinking is, because mm-hmm. these other unions that were not in the public sector, that were in the private sector,
yeah.
100 years ago, might have made some strides in you know,
fixing some of the problems that were left over from the 19th century in the work environment. I mean, I'll concede that, but it wasn't the NEA. And it wasn't public sector unions. So you see how just collectivized they where they're basically taking credit, you know, for it's almost like
it's as if no employer would ever allow their employees to not work on the weekends if it weren't for them. You know, it's
right.
It's crazy. It's like saying the government invented the internet. No, not at all. I mean, you know.
You don't think that these greedy capitalists would have figured that out, that they shouldn't have people working 110 hours a week?
Well, you know, people who work 110 hours a week aren't necessarily the most productive or the most happy, and they can always quit their job and go somewhere else because there are lots of employers out there who probably would want to compete for their labor.
Yeah. And I think that's the real thing that people forget about in the market is that there's competition for labor as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like how you turned that around, Brett. That was good. I like that technique.
But there's a big difference between public sector workers and private sector workers with respect to unions. I think that I certainly don't have anything against the concept of unionization or collective bargaining. In the private sector, the market has a correction mechanism where if the union gets too powerful, and of course, in a free market, that could never happen because they couldn't ask, you know, the government to point guns or make laws to give them more power and to give them more taxpayer resources.
And to protect them when they use violence to try to get their way.
Exactly. But even if that could happen somehow, if a union could get too powerful, they basically destroy themselves. Because if they demand too much from their employer, you know, who's focused on a bottom line, and they say, no, give us more. We don't care about your profits. We don't care about being in the red. You just keep giving us more. That company is going to go out of business.
Right.
And they're not going to have jobs. And as we saw in the last few decades in this country, especially in the Midwest, especially in the automotive industry.
Yeah, that was exactly what I thought.
Right. As these unions became more powerful and just in manufacturing in general, all those jobs, there was a mass exodus of jobs. Because the companies, a lot of these companies that did manufacturing said, well, wait a minute. The economy around the world develops at different speeds. We have people in Southeast Asia who have, you know, for generations never been anything but peasants.
Right.
We can pay them a lot less, still increase their standard of living. So, you know, it helps us. It helps them. Mm-hmm. It helps that country. So they'd be happy to have us. The only people that it hurts are these unions that were trying to basically put us out of business by, you know, being greedy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there's a balance of did unions come in and in some ways make a positive difference at the turn of the 20th century? Sure. But it's also these things work on a continuum. Mm-hmm. And once you start grabbing that government power, where does that stop? Where does that go? I mean, we see where it went.
Yeah. We see that it doesn't stop.
So we saw that the market has some corrective forces in the private sector. In the public sector, the trough is endless because the government can just keep taking more and more money from taxpayers. So those unions can grow and grow and grow. And as they get more resources, they can, you know, send that money back to Washington, send that money back to their representatives, lobby for more laws, lobby for more control. And it's just like this giant monster.
Yeah.
So it's two very, very different things, the public and the private sector, when it comes to unions.
Yeah, absolutely. I liked what you said about them having this endless access to other people's money.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is like making people's wallets public, as we said before.
Right. And that there's no way the market can ever correct that because the government receives no market signals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you think about how much time and effort it would take for people to get involved in politics and lobby the government and say, you know, I don't want my taxes to go up $100 or $1,000 a year because, you know, these teachers are going to be getting more benefits.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth anybody's time really to do that. But yet, you know, they can lobby the government and they can get these really concentrated benefits, which have dispersed cost, essentially. So there's always an incentive for it to happen that way, where the benefits will be concentrated onto certain groups.
Yeah, that's the beauty of a democratic system, right? Because everybody talks about it like it's good, like, oh, you get a voice. But what it really does is it concentrates the benefits and disperses the costs.
Right.
So who's going to fight to save $11 a year in taxes?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Although I would argue that it may be more than that. I mean, just thinking about the amount of property taxes that I pay. I mean, I'm a homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a ridiculous amount just to support a couple of schools in my town. I don't have any children. You know, I don't think that I should be paying that.
Right. I don't you shouldn't.
No. I mean, who decided that I'm obligated to do that? I don't think I am.
Oh, well, more in a minute, I guess.
Yeah, we'll be back with more. This is Free Talk Live. If you'd like to give us a call and weigh in with your thoughts, our number is 603-435-1105. We'll be back.
Annual Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Fresh from Florida, is coming March 19th. See Porsche, Corvette, Ferrari, Jaguar, BMW, Mazda, Acura, Audi, and many other world-class racing teams battle in America's toughest road race as Sebring hosts the first race of the Intercontinental Le Mans Cup in 2011. Gates open Wednesday, March 16th. Order your tickets today by calling 800-626-RACE or visit SebringRaceway.com. See the cars and stars of the American Le Mans Series, driver autograph sessions, vintage race cars, and visit the Party Zone, featuring a spring break bikini contest. Up-and-coming band Selby, Chuckman, Alluvion, Selena Jordan, and DJ Scotty B. Presented by GoMobileWeb.com. 4 days of family fun at Sebring. Children's club owner admitted free. Get all the info at SebringRaceway.com. The 59th Annual Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Fresh from Florida. March 19th is the date. Sebring is the place. Order your tickets at SebringRaceway.com. Brought to you in part by Budweiser, Jaguar, and Michelin.
Welcome back to Free Talk Live. This is Stephanie here with you tonight.
And Brett.
And we're doing a show for you. It is your show. You can call in about whatever you want. Our number is 603-435-1105. One more time, that's 603-435-1105. And you can, of course, see us on the cam doing what we do if you go to cam.freetalklive.com. Or cam.lrn.fm. And we were talking about the Wisconsin protests and some of the things that go into that, concepts behind unions and government taking people's money and whatnot. But we do have a call on the line, so we're going to bring on David and Keene. David, are you here?
I'm here.
Yeah, what's
I'm calling. I'm going to say that I appreciate you as a host all the time when you're on, Stephanie.
Well, thanks,
when you're on. When you're on with Prometheus Unchained, which was on today, which unfortunately I missed.
Oh, that's okay. They do have a podcast, which is available at flamingfreedom.com.
And I know. I've utilized that much. Actually.
Excellent. And maybe some of the other listeners would want to check that out. But thanks. I really appreciate the fact that you enjoy listening.
Yeah. And I appreciate both y'all's views all the time. But I'm calling to not, because I'm not in agreement with hardly anything y'all are saying today.
Okay, that's fine.
Great.
Yeah.
One, I think Republicans and Democrats are very different, extremely different. One is on the more on the side of the unions, and one is less on the side of the unions. One is happy to demonize Muslims and have Muslim hearings and, you know, just tell the world that Muslims are horrible people, and one is not in that vein.
I'm just going to interrupt you there, David. I can see that, you know, there is sort of more of a warmongering, I guess, anti-Muslim sentiment, I guess, on the Republican side would be what you're referring to. But we do have a Democratic president right now who has not closed Guantanamo. I mean, I think, and has not really ended the war in Iraq, despite saying that he would. And so, I don't know. Maybe the Democrats don't have the exact same rhetoric as Republicans, but in their actions, they're essentially the same.
Well, the health care, that would probably, I doubt that would have happened without
the health care bill that passed in the last year.
I know it's aligned with the insurance companies, and they get huge money for it, but I don't think anything would have went anywhere with a Republican.
Well, that sounds like something Republicans would do, from my understanding of what most people think of Republicans, is that they would try to help the big, bad insurance company, which is exactly what Obama and the Democrats did.
Right.
So, I mean, here's my little speech. I'll give you this in a nutshell, and then you can react to it, David. But, you know, these two political parties that have so much power in this country,
they have an agenda that I think if they were honest and open about what they want to do at their upper echelons, you know, the elites in the Democratic and Republican Party, if they were forthright with people about what it is, it would be very unpopular. So what they try to do is find a group of people that they can tell a story to, and then that group of people will put momentum behind their agenda. Yep. So the Democrats came up with this trick first, where they said, you know, with their elitist mindset, they said, where can we find a bunch of people who are gullible and uneducated and will believe the things that we say? Oh, minorities, poor people. So we'll tell them that we're the party of the downtrodden, and we'll use the mythology of people like Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson, and we'll tell them a big story about how all we care, we lose sleep at night if we can't help these poor other, you know, downtrodden people. And I think in the late 70s and the early 80s, the Republicans looked at this strategy that had been relatively effective for the Democrats. They said, where could we find a huge group of people who will believe anything that we say?
Religion. So
they, yeah, they go to the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
If those people believe that the earth is 5,000 years old and the first woman was made out of a guy's rib, what could we possibly tell them that they wouldn't believe? So they both use the same trick. And keep in mind, this is two groups of people that go into that building on that hill every day in Washington, D.C., and they use other people's money to reward their friends and punish their enemies. So if they have different talking points, or if they've decided to target different groups of people for their rhetoric and their lies, I would still say that that's not a difference in any way that matters ethically.
So you know? You think the whole country are just a bunch of dupes?
No. What do you mean the whole country are a bunch
so
of dupes?
So you think all we're doing is just buying a whole bunch of slack from the people? You don't think the actions stand behind the words?
Whose actions?
I mean, people just what I'm saying is that you're saying that they're selling all this stuff to these people, but people vote on, I mean, by their fruits you will know them. You know what I'm saying? And that's and
well, David, I think
the fruits that they do is what speak loud. Their words, everybody knows politicians talk.
So what are the fruits?
And the reason that
I think the
African Americans, I mean, it's obvious, you know.
So show me the fruit.
I mean,
let's see what's the fruit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, didn't Lyndon Johnson pass tons of civil rights stuff?
No, what Lyndon Johnson did in following in the footsteps of John F. Kennedy, and you know, to be honest with you, I don't think John F. Kennedy was a bad man. I mean, and I think that in many ways he, from what I know about him, and I used to teach history, so I researched the person behind a lot of these, you know, figures that have just historically been carved in stone at this point. I don't think John F. Kennedy was as bad as of a guy as a lot of the people who've held the title of president, but. And maybe he had some genuine interest in, you know, if not just for the sake of his own legacy, moving the civil rights discussion forward. But the civil rights movement happened because of people. It happened because of the people
yes.
who are doing the exact same things that you see in Keene happening. It didn't happen because a guy from Texas signed a piece of paper.
That followed. He jumped on the bandwagon.
Right. What politicians people. Do is they see a parade that's coming. That's people. And it's about change, and it's about standing up to oppression.
It's about ideas. People realizing those ideas are wrong.
Yeah, and about ideas. And they say, well, does that parade shake up the status quo too much? Well, if we can, you know, head it off at the pass, we should try to beat it down. Which is why you saw in the early 1960s people having tear gas grenades thrown at them and dogs sicked on them and being beaten with billy clubs. And we have the murders in Mississippi of civil rights workers, which involved the cops. But when that movement grew too powerful, you know, with people like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, the politicians said, we can't stop this parade. Let's jump in front of it and pretend we're leading it. Let's pretend it's for us. And that's why, and when people say Lyndon Johnson is why African-American people have civil rights, that is so,
no
nothing against you, David, but that is so reductive and sickening to me that I don't know.
I consider myself on the left side of things, and the reason I consider myself on the left side of things is because of, just as the same reason a lot of African Americans are on the quote unquote left side of things, same reason.
So, David, what you're saying, if I understand it correctly, is that you know you care about people, right? You want them to have good lives, right?
And well, that, and I don't want corporations to. That's another thing I disagreed with y'all on. Is I'm like for the unions and for the teachers, and I personally think the corporations and things like that, they're just like money machines, and they'll devour people, and they'll devour land, and they'll trash it. And this country has chosen to give the workers some rights, and give the land, draw the line on what you can do with land, water, and sea. And and the corporations said to, well, we can't do our business here. We got to go somewhere where we can trash the people, the land, and the sea.
Well, yeah, I definitely sympathize, David. I mean, I understand the anti-corporate sentiment, especially when you see
when you see
these companies with these business practices. I mean, like, for instance, Walmart uses eminent domain to try to get land to build their stores on.
Right, right.
And I think that it's really important to remember that corporations would not exist, and especially wouldn't exist in the form that they do today, where they get favors from the government, they get all kinds of sweetheart deals. Without the government, government is what enables them to exist.
Right. And corporations versus unions is a false choice. It's a false dichotomy. It's two people who are trying to use the guns of two groups that are trying to use the guns of government to get their way and impose it on others.
Exactly. And David, thank you so much for the call. We got some other calls
on the
line. We appreciate you. And you can call us at 603-435-1105 if you'd like to weigh in with your thoughts. This is Free Talk Live. We'll be back. Welcome back to Free Talk Live. Thank you so much for sticking with us through the break. This is Stephanie with you.
And Brett.
And we do appreciate you listening to us tonight. And thank you so much for all the calls we've gotten tonight. Phones are loaded up, and it's not even through the first hour yet. Usually the calls don't start rolling in until about the end of the show. So we certainly appreciate your participation. And, of course, if you would like to call us, you can give us a call at 603-435-1105 and let us know what's on your mind. But we did have a call come in during the last segment. This is Mike in New York. Mike, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, guys. Nice
hey,
to hear you guys.
Hi. So what was on your mind tonight, Mike?
Well, I wanted to talk about the difference between Democrats and Republicans, because I used to be a college activist in the day and was a hardcore Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've always mentioned to people is if you really want to see the similarities between the two parties, then you should definitely go to one of their conventions. Like I went to a lot of CPAC conventions. And go with a very open mind to looking at what they're exactly saying with their messages. Because what I noticed with the Republicans was they started to sound more and more like Democrats. They were always talking about some kind of welfare programs. But mostly, you know, corporate welfare, not so much welfare for the poor. But it is really easy to see the similarities if you just sort of know what to look for. And I would recommend saying, you know, look at what they're actually saying. Are they giving out welfare? And it all comes down to they want to take your money to do something with it that they want to do. They, you know, they're not really concerned with your well-being at all.
Yeah, I think that's spot on from what I've seen.
Mike, do you know that those conventions are paid for with taxpayer money, by the way, because they're considered appropriated money for that because they're considered to be educational events?
I didn't know that at all.
Wow. Sorry, go ahead, Mike.
But I just started to see that a lot of it was the same sort of rhetoric that you would get from Democrats, only sounding a little bit more Republican than Democrats. But really, it's not much of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. Especially if you look at their actions and you kind of strip away some of the rhetoric and you look at exactly what they do. I mean, just compare the last two presidents. This is something that Brett and I talked about on the last show that we did together on Free Talk Live. Just comparing the actions of Obama and Bush, they haven't done anything of any significant substantial difference.
Right.
Right.
And actions are what matter, not words. Words might get people to knock on doors and, campaign for a particular politician, as we were discussing before. They might motivate the base, quote unquote. But at the end of the day, actions speak much louder than words. And their actions reflect the fact that they're taking people's money and doing what they want with it, as you said, Mike.
And I think that if you just kind of distill their message down to the most essential part, for both sides, it seems to be give us money and more power or bad things will happen. Seems to be, if you look at especially the 2004 Republican convention, the 2008 Democratic National Convention, I mean, that was the message.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one where they, the police, the Denver police had those outfits that said, "We get up early to beat the crowds," right?
Yes,
the protesters.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, think one of the biggest things to look at, though, is to look at the way the country has moved over the last 40 years. And even though there's been Democrats in power one year and Republicans the next year, we're heading in the same direction regardless of who's in power.
Well, it's interesting, too, because the theme every time that there's a new election, you know, what are the Republicans going to run on in 2012? I will tell you, it's going to be change. Same thing the Democrats did in 2008.
Exactly.
Same thing the Democrats did in 2004. Republicans in 2000. Republicans in 96. Democrats in 92. Republicans in 90. I mean, how far back do you want me to go? Because the question at every election is, hey, are you happier now after 4 years of so-and-so? Are you better off after 4 years of so-and-so? And nobody ever is. So the theme for every, I mean, Obama kind of, you know, made it famous and made it kind of cliche, but that's the theme for every presidential or even congressional elections every 2, 4, or 6 years.
Right.
So. Yeah.
And somehow people just forget, you know, at the end of, it only takes them 4 years to forget, like, oh, this is how bad the last guy was. You know, I should keep within this system and keep hoping that something is going to be significantly different, you know, between these two parties, when it just never is. And it amazes me that even people who are older and who've been around through many cycles of this still continue to have faith in this system and to continue to participate. It's amazing.
Well, it's like what Brett was talking about before. It's like, it's a religion almost. You're going after that thing. Well, it's just hope and change. And the more you believe, the more faith you have, things will get better. It never does.
Right.
Yeah. Mike, I have a question for you.
Sure.
You said that you're a reform conservative, I guess. What was it that sort of changed your mind or made you go into more of a liberty perspective?
I had a friend who was also in the College Republicans with me, and he was starting the journey. He was reading Rothbard at the time, and started giving me articles from Lou Rockwell, and I started reading Rothbard myself. But what really hit the nail in the coffin was at the last CPAC, I think it was 2006 I went to, and Senator Mitch McConnell was there giving a speech about how the government needs to get out of the family by creating a government program to get the government out of the family. And I saw that, and it was like everybody was cheering, and I'm sitting there like, whoa, that was like mind-blowing. Like, did he just say that? Didn't make any sense to me. But also, as an activist, as a conservative activist, I got to meet a lot of politicians, and a lot of them would say one thing in the campaign, and then when you're backstage, you know, they'd say something completely different, and that really turned me off to a lot of it.
Yeah. Wow. I'm just still reeling from that story you told about a government program to get government out of the family. I can't even imagine what that would be.
Wild.
And of course, if you look at the Republican Party and their actions, I mean, everything they've done has been to interfere with the family. I mean, wasn't it Bush who wanted to mandate like premarital counseling for all couples who were about to get married? And, you know, they've wanted to regulate various things related to homosexuality and, you know, ban gay marriage and all that kind of stuff. They're very concerned with what people do in their private lives. And in the meantime, they're having affairs, you know, in their office. They're not really doing the things that they publicly say are conducive to happy families and all of that kind of thing. So clearly they just have no integrity, and they're just saying whatever they think will get people to support them.
Exactly. It's like a total mind game. Where they just, have you ever heard of the thing called neuro-linguistics programming?
Yep.
Yes, I have.
It's kind of that. It's like, let's just say a lot of fun-sounding, happy, warm, fuzzy words, and people will totally look the other way when we do our own actions and live our own lives.
Wow.
And I started to really see that the more I got into campaign work, and it was just kind of disgusting me.
Well, people sort of do their own self-maintenance with that as well, with the language that they use. And I said a few times in the past that, like, we all understand how thoughts turn into words, but words also have a tendency to turn into thoughts. When I've had conversations with people and they employ these first person plural pronouns when they're talking about the government, like we, our, us, I'm like, who are you talking about?
Yeah.
And they get really upset when they say we, and I say, do you mean the U.S. military? Because that's not me. I didn't do those things. I what other organization that you're not a part of that doesn't care about you do you use first person plural pronouns to refer to? And that's really upsetting for people because that's their programming. Right. And, you know, a lot of this, it's not an intellectual superiority thing. A lot of this is emotional, and it's very difficult with people who are older, who've poured more of their hard-earned money into this system and more of their emotional energy into the system as well. It's harder for them to let go. And sometimes it's impossible, which is really why I think it's important to focus on younger people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's almost like you're in a bad, like most people are in a bad relationship with the state where they put so much work into it, they really believe in it, but they don't want to see that the girl's just not into them, you know?
Right, right.
And she's abusing them emotionally, financially.
Yeah. Or and then they wind up saying things like, "Well, I shouldn't have been antagonizing him while he was drunk," you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they make excuses for the abuser.
Right.
Exactly. It was my fault. I should act differently. Yeah. I mean, you hear people say that all the time when people, you know, when a cop does something, you know, like. I just remember like when Pete got arrested for wearing a hat in court. There were so many people who said, "Well, he shouldn't have been wearing a hat." Really? You're going to tell me you shouldn't have been wearing a hat? It's his fault somehow? it's insane.
Like, it really is like the state is a metaphor for family.
Oh,
really.
Yeah.
People sort of look at it as, well, he's, you know, the state, the cop, whatever, he's like my father figure. And, well, if Pete did something to get arrested, then he must have been doing something wrong, you know?
Well, it's an extension.
Well, maybe it was the state.
Yeah, and I think you know, more than a metaphor, it's actually an extension. I think a lot of the...
Of what people learn in their families.
Right.
Yeah,
and
I
that
agree.
That makes school make sense, and then 12 years of school certainly makes the state make sense.
Yeah, I think it's really important to deconstruct the psychology of these things in order to understand it so you
Indeed.
Won't fall victim. So, Mike, unless there's something else on your mind, thanks a lot for the call tonight. We certainly do appreciate
Thank
your
you
thoughts.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
And we'll be back with more. This is Free Talk Live. Give us a call. We'll be back. This is Free Talk Live. Welcome back to our show. We are so glad to have you listening tonight. My name is Stephanie.
And my name is Brett.
And we're here to entertain you
nice.
And have a discussion with you, of course. And the only way we can do that is if you call us at 603-435-1105. One more time, that's 603-435-1105. And of course, if you go to freetalklive.com, you can see all these cool features and have our number for future reference in case you forget it, and also see us on the cam. You should check out Brett because, you know, he eats a paleo diet. He works out, you know, eye candy.
Oh, thank you.
Ladies.
I'll wave.
Yeah, we're just kidding. I mean, actually, we both try to keep healthy, right, Brett, by eating a low-carbohydrate diet. And
yes.
We were just talking about that a little bit before the show.
Mm-hmm.
We had a wonderful guest in the studio, I guess you could say, behind the scenes, which was a demo from Liberty on Tour.
Right.
Who made us, not for us, he made it for himself, but he shared it with us, a delicious pork rump of some kind.
Yes.
That was very good. So we want to thank him for that. But anyway, back on topic. Before we had a couple of calls, and by the way, I thought those were really cool calls.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
We had one that was kind of disagreeing with us from David, and we got to talk to him about unions and corporations, and I understood where he was coming from. Absolutely. I mean, I could really sympathize. I don't like it, you know, the feeling of, I guess, corporations kind of stepping on the little guy, I guess you
right.
could say. But it is so important to remember that they can't and wouldn't exist without the government, and the government really enables them. And then we had another call from Mike, who was saying that he was a reformed conservative and wanted to tell us about the lack of differences between the two parties. So those were both very interesting calls. But we were talking about the Wisconsin protests. You know, they're trying to get their collective bargaining rights for the teachers. And there have been these protests, and these teachers are, I guess, somehow convincing students to come out with them and sort of espouse some of the same talking points, you know, about the weekends. And if you like the weekend, you should vote for us and all that kind of thing.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. And their cause is just, you know, so just that they're managing to convince teenagers to not go to high school. You know,
that's hard. That is really tough. You know, I wouldn't have missed a day of government school if I, even if I was sick, even if I had the flu. I would have kept on pressing on.
Oh, I went to bed with my school clothes on so I could jump up and get there even quicker the next day.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Of course, we're being facetious. I took every opportunity possible to miss government school, especially, you know, when it got towards the end of my senior year. Yeah. I was into college and I said, I think I'm not going to be so into this.
I think I missed about 30 days my senior year.
Nice.
Mostly signing myself out of school with notes. First and second period every day. I won't, you know, but then me and my friend would usually take off.
Yeah.
Go play golf.
Time better spent.
Yeah.
I mean, because then you're actually learning a skill and you're not being lorded over by these authoritarians who really just want to teach you how to be an obedient citizen.
Yeah. And serve. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I really wish I had realized some of this stuff earlier, I guess, and seen the domination memes that were present not only in government school, but in my family, in my religious upbringing. I just wish I had had some of those insights before. And, you know, before the break, we were kind of talking about deconstructing these things a little bit, that people learn to be obedient and to apologize for their abusers, you know, very early on in life, in their families.
This is what pains me so much, too, about the situation in Wisconsin and why I put so much effort into trying to, you know, get these kids to come on my show and have a conversation. I don't want, as opinionated as I am about this issue, and as much as I feel like I know about this issue, I don't want to ambush them.
Yep.
You know, I don't want to bully them. But, like, it's 2011. I mean, I was going through high school. We didn't even have the internet, like, in the 1990s.
Yeah.
Or, you know, wasn't readily accessible.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no way for us to, you know, connect with people and learn a lot of this stuff. But today it's so easy. And with all of these channels of information and communication that are available to these young people today, I mean, I found them all on Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah.
And
easily you compiled a list of, like, you know, 15 students, you said, who you could contact.
And I found them through these social networking sites. But the people that they're listening to, the people who have their ear, are their public school unionized teachers.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they are forced to go to government schools, to be fair. They are stuffed into these concrete boxes for 50,000 hours you know, over the course of their education.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that now that we have this wonderful tool, the internet, they should be exposed to different viewpoints.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's just, it was sad because when you were saying, I wish I could have realized a lot of this stuff earlier.
Yeah.
It's so easy to do that today.
Yes.
And I hate to see these young people who are being used as props by a system that destroys their capacity for free thought and critical thinking, you know, and cheering for that.
Yeah.
It reminds me of one of these, you know, political conventions, which basically just look like a group of lemmings cheering about gravity.
Right.
Essentially.
Yeah.
You know? So.
And they're falling off the cliff the whole
right.
time.
Right. It's really sad. And I was hoping that I could have some kind of an impact, even if it was just a handful of them, because I was watching these YouTube videos and it was so saddening.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, maybe some of them are actually listening and they're just scared to call in. Please, we would really like to talk to you. Our number is 603-435-1105. And even if you're not one of these Wisconsin students, please do give us a call and weigh in with your thoughts, because we would love to talk to you. This is, of course, the show about your calls. And once again, 603-435-1105. But Brett, you know, something that you said before really struck me. And you were talking about how you saw these YouTube videos of these students, and you were saying that it seemed like they were just repeating talking points and almost not talking to the person who they were ostensibly talking to.
Right.
Like they were talking at them or something. And, you know, part of communication, part of connecting with another human being is listening, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that these kids have been in systems, you know, their family, probably religion and government school, of course, as we know, where people have never really listened to them.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was certainly how, that was certainly just going off my own experience growing up like this. You know, I felt a lot of times that my preferences as a kid were ignored or subjugated or, you know, considered to be less than those of adults. Couldn't do the things that I wanted to do. Couldn't learn about what I wanted to learn. You know, it was like, you have to do this because I said so, and I'm an arbitrary authority figure. And so really what I would want to do if I could talk to one of these kids is listen to them. And really listen to what they're saying. And, you know, maybe that could start some kind of an exchange.
The only thing that I would be confrontational with them about is if I asked them why they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of I tried to run through this in my head a little bit because I didn't want to come across as a bully. Like I said,
yeah.
The only thing that I think would have me on the offensive against them is if I asked them, why are you as an individual going to these things? If they started saying things like, you can thank a union for your 5-day work week,
mm-hmm.
I would need to stop them. I would need to cut them off because all of them are there and they're saying that this is about being heard. This is about our voice. This is about democracy. But dude, that's not your voice. If you're just spouting out your teacher's prepackaged talking points,
mm-hmm.
that's not your voice.
Or your parents' talking
right?
points.
And that's not about expression. Like if me and one of these students, I mean, I hope if I could say this, you know, like if you and I were walking and we passed a parrot and one of us said, oh, you know, it's beautiful today. Mm-hmm. And then as we pass, the parrot starts saying, it's beautiful today. It's beautiful today. I mean, we would agree that that's not the parrot's opinion.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's not the parrot expressing itself
yeah.
or its individuality or its voice. So when I see these kids being used as props and being used as pet parrots, that's really sad because they are capable of so much more. And the adults might not be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of these union delegates and teachers who are involved in these protests, they might not be capable of more anymore, you know, mm-hmm. at this point in their lives. But those kids are.
Yeah.
And I wish it looks like it would be so easy to intervene.
Yeah.
But,
and Brett, you know, it's so obvious for me. I mean, just knowing Brett personally, the work that he does with kids, it's very obvious to me that you do care about them and you care about their preferences and you want to help them express their own voice and their own individuality.
I would like to help people, learn from some of the mistakes that I made or some of the things that I didn't realize.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, too, I'm going to be an old man in a world that's run by them.
Right.
So this is a little, you know, selfish, too.
We'll be back. We got a call on the line. This is Free Talk Live. Welcome back. This is Free Talk Live. We're so happy to have you listening to us tonight. This is Stephanie.
And this is Brett.
And you should give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. We've had a lot of great callers tonight participating in a nice discussion. Oh, and we did have another call on the line, but he just dropped off. We had Jacob on the line, but maybe Jacob could call back. Maybe he had some phone trouble or something like that. Be happy to take your call. Oh, maybe he's back. Well, whoever this is, caller, you're on the air. Who's this?
Hi, this is Jacob.
Hi, Jacob.
I just dropped off the line. My phone got all staticky, so I hang up and called back.
Gotcha. Thanks for calling back. So what was on your mind tonight?
Well, I figured I'd stay with the general topic of the whole union debate and public and public teachers and the unions and that.
Sure.
And that area. And I'm not a student right now, but I did graduate recently in 2009. And I wasn't liberty-minded.
From high school or college?
From high school.
Okay.
And I wasn't very liberty-minded at all back then. So, you know, I was pretty much just eating up whatever these people told me. But I do remember there was one teacher I had that, you know, was a high-level union member. She, like, had tenure. She had, you know, all this stuff. And I just remember that we did absolutely nothing in her class. It was, you know, she didn't even, you know, care about teaching, really, even.
Oh, wow.
And, it was really funny because she'd sit there and just espouse her opinions as if they were fact in her class, even more so than, you know, than just using the textbooks or something like that. She'd sit there and, you know, comment on current events and things like that. And, you know, of course, back then I just ate it all up. But, you know, now I look at it and see how awful it is and, you know, notice that it's next to impossible to fire someone like that is really scary.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's almost debatable whether it's better to sit there wasting time, I guess, so you're not having certain I basically sit there learning nothing or to... you know, what's better?
Well, you said you graduated from high school in 2009, Jacob?
Yes.
Oh, so that, I mean, this is really recently. So what was the transition like for you? Like if you say 2 years ago when you're mm-hmm. a senior, you're kind of eating up this person's nonsense that's being spoon-fed to you. I totally understand that. And I was in exactly the same position, you know, when I was your age and even beyond your age. So what was the transition like for you over the last couple of years? How did you start to get this?
So it was a very dramatic transition, actually. And all throughout high school, I did all 4 years in junior ROTC.
Wow.
At the same time, I was in the police explorer program at my local hometown. So that's kind of like ROTC, except with the police department.
Yeah.
So I was involved in all that. And then I was actually going to college on an Army ROTC scholarship. So I did 1 year at UNH with that. When I first started going to UNH, that's when I hooked up with the Young Americans for Liberty over there. And they kind of like, they started me on my path. And luckily I was able to bail on the whole ROTC thing. And I put college on hold, because of all that. But
wow.
So I bailed on that and everything. But it was, I started going to the, I went to the College Republicans meetings because that's what I considered myself. And then a couple of the Young Americans for Liberty guys would show up at the College Republicans and, attempt to talk before they were quickly silenced. They got me looking into Ron Paul. Of course, this was after the 2008 campaign.
Yeah.
I started looking in. I read a couple of his books, and that kind of got me started. I'm a New Hampshire native, so, it was kind of like the Free State Project had been going on around me this whole time. And I really, I started to meet people and all that kind of thing. I consider myself lucky to have lived here all along because, like, it'd really suck if I wasn't here.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I certainly do enjoy being here, in this community. I have a lot of people who have very similar ideas, for sure. But that's amazing to hear about your transition.
Yeah, it was a really dramatic change over just, like, a year and a half.
Was there, one moment? Can you remember, the one thing that pushed you over? Some people have that, some people don't. I mean, it sounds like you were in pretty deep, man. ROTC.
Police explorers.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's deep.
Yeah, so, I wasn't pretty deep. I know it was kind of eating at me, especially when I got into the college and, got into the big boys army, big boys ROTC.
Right.
Is I really started to run into the real bureaucracy and really realized, this isn't really fun at all. And at the same time, I'm reading Ron Paul and about how he's, against the wars in the Middle East. And that was a really new idea for me. And so, I'd bring that up in our class discussions, in ROTC, and then I'd just get blank stares. And that kind of scared me.
Wow.
And also bringing up things like, I'd always bring up the situation in Katrina where the National Guard was used to forcibly disarm people and force people out of their homes.
Yeah.
So I was asking, I'd ask, my fellow cadets, would you follow an order like that? And the overwhelming majority would be like, oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Whatever.
But what do they say? What do they say besides? I'm interested, Jacob. What do they say besides yes? Right. Because I would think that, even the most brain dead of people would attach some kind of rationalization for why they would do that.
Yeah, they would feel a shred of conscience.
So I'd use the Katrina example. And of course, I'd say, so you'd go around and round up everyone's guns and they'd say, oh, yeah, it was chaos down there. People were shooting each other and you have to maintain order. And of course, that's the thing I got. That's the excuse they'd give me. Or the forced evacuations where, the people don't know what's best for them and we know what's best for them and that kind of thing. So.
Yeah. It's not chaotic when they have guns. It's just chaotic when everyone else has guns and they need to use their guns to force everyone else who can't have guns to do things.
Yeah.
Right. Of course. Yeah. And the real chaos, I think, might have followed. That roundup of the weapons of peaceful people who are trying to protect their own homes, because criminals always have guns.
Sure.
Yeah, of course. And they were just using the weapon registry because I think they have, you have to have your guns registered down there. So they were just, mm-hmm. okay, this person has a gun in their house. Let's go in and see if we can take it. And
so they were profiling by law-abiding citizens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Talk about backwards.
Come on.
Doesn't make any sense. Jacob, I think you said before that you would get these blank stares when you would bring up these foreign policy things in your history class and talk to your ROTC classmates. But even if you get blank stares at first, I would encourage you not to be put off by that because you are planting seeds. These ideas.
It was a kind of what are you thinking blank stare? It was a kind of a... that question is not even supposed to be asked blank stare.
Yeah.
yeah, it was definitely a weird situation, especially, you know, I really didn't drag any of the professors and the teachers who are all Army like officers and stuff that into it, but I did drag a few of the more senior cadets who were, you know, when you graduate, you become an officer. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I did talk to a few of them, and luckily there was one cadet. She actually, you know, was my mentor, and she was pretty open to those ideas and actually helped me along. And, so luckily there was at least one person in there that, you know, kind of agreed with me to a certain extent.
Sure. Well, I think these ideas, you know, especially when they're presented in terms of, you know, how they can benefit. People have these natural affinity for freedom. They know that they are responsible for their actions and the ultimate decider of how they live their lives. And I think those things have natural appeal. So, Jacob, is there anything else on your mind tonight, or you got some other calls? Maybe I'll have to let you go.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's good.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jacob.
Thanks, Jacob.
We'll be back with more calls online. Phones are loaded up. This is...